Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there. It is Humpity Hump Day, my favorite day of the week, and we have bright sun and warm weather with a nice cool breeze. No rain this week, thank goodness. Amy will not be here. I'm sure you guys remember that she's off to a Young Living conference in Utah. So Amy, if you're listening, a big shout out to you, and I hope you have a great time. You deserve it. A week off, sort of, so to speak. Things are rocking and rolling here. The editor is quite pleased with the book, so that should be coming out hopefully as soon as possible. I'm working on a book cover, so feel free to private message me on Facebook at facebook.com/celiacroads, or go to my website, rustymacdonald.com, and let me know if you have any ideas for the cover of my book. I am super excited to finally have a new youth center on. I have several friends that have gone to see Ed, who is a hypnotist, for various reasons, and have been extraordinarily successful in the hypnosis process. And I got a little bit of a taste of it, and it was really interesting. And no, I don't do the funky chicken, folks. So Ed was good. He's not making me chicken dance. But it was really, really interesting. And I'm so glad that Ed's going to take some time out to talk to us about the hypnosis and what it means, and how it's different than subliminal, or is it different? That's what I want to know. So good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rusty. Thank you so much for this opportunity to be on, I'm very grateful to you and all of your listeners for having me.
Absolutely. So let's start at the very basics. I'm a basic kind of girl, so who are you and what do you do?
Well, my name is Ed Lane, and I am a board-certified hypnotist. My training is through the National Guild of Hypnotists, the largest organization of its kind with over 5,000 members worldwide. And I've been doing this for about 10 years now. I've always been fascinated with the mind and how it works and how we work as human beings. I was introduced to this whole thing way back in about 1980, give or take, when I met Bob Proctor. Bob Proctor of The Secret movie fame literally changed my life for the better. I was an insurance agent at the time working for Prudential, and they had the foresight to hire Bob Proctor in what he called OC's seminars back then as a motivational professional to help motivate the sales force. And we were bused down to Boston, I think it was like every other week for about 12 weeks or so, and Bob would be up on the stage and delivering his message for the day, and he literally changed my life. About two sentences into the first session, my jaw dropped, and my life was forever changed when he was talking about the unlimited, untapped power of the unconscious mind. And what was interesting is he never used the H word, the word hypnosis, but he was always talking about get yourself into a nice, relaxed state, close your eyes, and imagine yourself already in possession of whatever it was that your goal might be. Which, bottom line, is getting yourself into a hypnotic state. So he's been pushing hypnosis for a long, long time. And I think a lot of people stay away from the H word for whatever reason. We've gotten a bad rap through the years with movies and TV shows. But hypnosis is also known as guided visualization, guided meditations. There are a number of different terms for it. But basically, hypnosis is a mental state as denoted by brainwave activities, and which can actually be measured. Right now we are all working in what we call the beta state. Beta state means that our brain is functioning somewhere between 13 and 25 cycles per second. So brainwave activity is rather brisk at this level. The first step down is called the alpha state. Alpha state is daydreaming. Here our brainwaves slow down to between 8 and 12 cycles per second. And this is a very natural state. You and I are in and out of it every single day. If we've ever had the experience of pulling up to a traffic light and then hearing the horn behind us because the light had turned green and we hadn't noticed, we were in the alpha state of hypnosis. Bottom line, what happened is our conscious mind drifted off. We were thinking about something else, a phone call we had to make, or thinking about our kids, or anything else in our lives. And momentarily, we left the vehicle we were driving. And as soon as we heard the horn behind us, our conscious mind came back into the vehicle, and we drove away like nothing happened. So that's alpha state, and that's where most behavior modification occurs. Weight loss, nail biting, smoking cessation, any number of behavioral issues are handled very nicely in the alpha state. The next state down, called theta state, is where our brainwave slows down to between 5 and 7 cycles per second. This is deep meditation, deep state of hypnosis, where regressions can occur. Current life regressions, past life regressions, where some work is done. And then the next step down from that is called the delta state, which is plain and simple sleep. So if you follow that pattern, we all flow from the beta state, normal consciousness, through alpha, through theta, and arrive at delta every single time we fall asleep. So we are in and out of the hypnotic state literally every single day of our lives. What's remarkable about these states is that we become what is called suggestible, which means that our conscious mind does not interfere with the suggestions that are being given to us. And those suggestions would, of course, be in the light of whatever situation we're trying to change in our lives, whether it be smoking cessation, weight loss, or whatever. Those suggestions are much more acceptable by the unconscious mind, which then goes to work creating those changes within the person. So that's a brief description, if you want to call that brief, of what hypnosis is. What it isn't, and you can attest to this from our session, is that you're not asleep, you're not unconscious, you're not a zombie, there's no hovering around the room like they do in the movies. You hear every word that's said, you remember almost every word that's said. It's generally a relaxed and pleasant experience. And you cannot be made to do anything you don't want to do. Our Creator did not make us so weak and vulnerable that we could be instructed to do something against our will or our moral character, which is why I don't own an island down in the Caribbean and people sending me money every week, because it just doesn't work.
Exactly.
I can't make someone go out and rob a bank or do anything that they wouldn't normally do under regular conditions.
It was an interesting experience, though. I meditate, and I definitely felt like it was a deeper form of meditation. I felt a lot of pressure, like I was really sinking into the chair, which was which was very interesting. And you also did EFT with me, which again, grateful that you're taking time out to explain this, because I have friends that use EFT, but with my schedule and everything that I read and trying to line everything up, I haven't really paid attention to this concept of EFT. So can you first explain the difference between subliminal and hypnosis?
Well, and subliminal is generally done while we are in a normal state of consciousness, the beta state, or when we are asleep in delta state.
Mm-hmm.
And subliminal messages are usually delivered at a very low volume, usually encapsulated in some other music, let's say. Let's say we have a favorite track of music, and we can have subliminal messages put into those so that they are at a very low volume. We can barely hear them audibly in our conscious mind, but they are playing underneath over and over and over and over again. So we are not inducing an artificial state of hypnosis, which is getting a person into the alpha or the theta states. So that really is the difference between the two, and it is based on the idea of compounding, listening to something over and over and over and over and over again that will create the change. So they're similar, but they are not the same thing.
Well, and I find it, yeah, absolutely. The clarification is interesting because you have different levels of the mind that you tap into with the meditative state. And in subliminal, they utilize megahertz to tap into those same places. So the similarities are interesting for those of us who are geeky enough to want to know.
Yeah, and my CDs do have subliminal tracks in them.
Right.
So while you're listening to some nice new agey type of music and me talking at a normal level, there are also other tracks buried beneath that which are delivering a similar but different message on a subliminal level.
And it's very – so do you feel comfortable with talking a little bit about how the brain works in regards to that piece, the distraction?
I will do my best if you have specific questions.
Talk a little bit about why it's important to distract the brain like that.
Well, the conscious mind, the part of our mind that we're working with right now, generally speaking, is its functions are to analyze and to rationalize. Those are really the big two things that the conscious mind does best. It analyzes a particular situation and comes up with solutions to it based on our previous education, experience, and training. It also rationalizes. A rationalization is simply a really good-sounding excuse for the things we do in life. And I usually say for some of the dumbest things that we do in life. We give ourselves a rationalization, which is an excuse that we are comfortable with, that will allow us to continue doing something that we know is hazardous to our health. And I'll pick on smokers for a moment. And I smoked for almost 30 years myself, so I feel I can really speak to this. Is, you know, the typical smoker will say that, it relaxes me. It gives me time to pause and collect my thoughts. And that's the rationalization. The reality is nicotine's a stimulant. It does not relax anyone. And we can all pause and take time to collect our thoughts with or without smoking. But it's just something that we say to ourselves, and we say it to ourselves over and over, and as we both know, a lie told often enough becomes the truth.
Right.
It becomes a belief system that we have, and beliefs are the most powerful things that we human beings hold on to.
Let me take a quick break here. If anybody would like to call in and talk to Ed, he's phenomenal and very knowledgeable, feel free. The lines are open, 347-205-9443. And we're on live with Ed at a New You Healing Center. Ed, what is your website?
www.anewyoucenter.com.
And are you okay giving out your phone number?
The phone number is 603-749-MIND, M-I-N-D, 6463.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about EFT and the premise and the history of it. What is EFT?
Certainly.
What does that stand for?
Emotional Freedom Techniques, and it is a cousin to acupuncture without needles, where instead of using needles to stimulate points on the body along the meridian systems, we simply use the tips of our fingers and tap gently on those spots. Now, EFT was created by Gary Craig about 30 years ago, 30, 35 years ago. And Gary Craig is a very interesting man, very interesting man. He's semi-retired now. I think he's probably 90 years old or so. And he's just a phenomenal person. But he is a Stanford-trained engineer. And he looks at things from the mindset of an engineer as opposed to a healer sometimes. So he was taking a class from Roger Callahan. Roger Callahan is a psychiatrist who, at least at the time, was out in California. And Roger Callahan had developed a system that EFT is based on. And it was something that at the time he was charging $100,000 to take his class and to receive his information and book. And what Roger Callahan had discovered is that by tapping on 12 different spots on the body, that we could eliminate all negative feelings. Now, he had a very specific protocol. Now, don't hold me to this as truth, but what he would do is that there would be a certain combination of tapping points based on whatever the diagnosis was. So let's say the diagnosis was addiction. So he would tap on certain points, let's say 3 or 4 of the 12 points, to work with a person for addiction. Now, if he was working with a person with a phobia, he would tap on some different points. And he had this huge volume which gave all of these sequences for every diagnosable condition imaginable. And Gary Craig was sitting in the, this is the story anyway, that Gary Craig was sitting in the audience and was watching all this, and he raises his hand and says, well, if you just tap on all 12 points, nobody really needs your book, do they? And EFT was born, and there was probably a decade of lawsuits going back and forth between Gary Craig and Roger Callahan, because what happened was Gary Craig took EFT out of the hands of licensed professionals and put it in the hands of every single person on the planet, which was kind of a neat thing for us who are not licensed professionals, but not so good for Roger Callahan, who could no longer sell his program for $100,000. But that's how the story goes of the creation of EFT, and it has grown phenomenally since then. Now, anyone looking to get more information on EFT, do not Google EFT. You will get 10 pages of electronic fund transfer information that will not help you at all.
That would be my luck.
You Google emotional freedom techniques. And there are literally millions of articles out there regarding this amazing tool that we now have at our disposal.
So,
and the operating statement behind EFT is that the cause of all negative emotions is a disruption in the body's electrical system. And by systematically tapping on these 12 very specific meridian points, the bad feelings, the negative emotions, disappear. And in many cases, immediately.
Is this based on the meridian?
Yes, it is. It's based on the same meridians used in acupuncture.
Okay. So the same chakra systems and yoga, that sort of thing. Very cool.
I don't believe they're the same as the chakra systems.
Oh, okay.
The chakras are energy centers within the body, and I think there are 7 of them. I'm thinking back to my other training. I also had some Reiki training in the past as well. These are based on the meridians, which comes directly from Chinese medicine. And there are 14 meridians or electrical circuits running through our body.
Mm-hmm.
And by tapping on these 12 very specific points, we are essentially giving our central nervous system a massage, and all of the negative emotions disappear, sometimes remarkably quickly. And I use this technique to help my smokers with urges. I also use it with my weight loss clients for urges, and it really doesn't matter. It's the same thing, an urge for a jelly donut or an urge for a cigarette or an urge for alcohol. It's all coming from the same place. It's a negative emotion, and we get rid of that negative feeling, and the urge goes away. And in many cases, it's virtually instantly. Some, not so much. Some requires more work.
Now, it's tapping a certain body part. Can you?
Yes.
Okay. So can you give us a little bit of a visual?
The first one is called the karate chop point. It is on the side of your hand if you wanted to think about a karate person breaking a board with karate. So we would take three or four fingers and gently tap on the side of the hands. Now, I believe that it's important to keep the body balanced. So when we have the ability, I like to tap on both sides of the body. So we would start on one hand and then go to the other hand. And it doesn't matter left or right, which one we start with, doesn't matter. That's generally where we start the sequence. We call it a tapping sequence. And for anyone who really pursues EFT or knows more about it, there is some, I don't want to say controversy out there, but there are different points. Not every practitioner uses the same point. In my practice, my next spot is going to be on the crown of the head. Now, this would also correspond with a chakra point. So we are tapping on the very crown of the head. This is electronically the most powerful spot on the human body.
So
the next,
I went through the session with you at the beginning of June. We did this tapping process, and I thought, it was really, really interesting because you start out and you're really charismatic when you're teaching how to do this. And you started out talking about the negative, your negative thinking, the fear-based thinking, all of and each point that you tap in this process, you continue this negative thinking. So can you get into that piece? Because that was really...
Yeah, if you would allow me to, I'll get into that in just a moment.
Yeah.
I wanted to finish with tapping points first, and then we'll get into the process. So the mechanics of it are we go from the karate chop spot, then the top of the head, then the tips of your eyebrows, the very tips of your eyebrows closest to the bridge of your nose. Now, tap hard enough to stimulate your electricity, but not so hard you can give yourself a black eye, okay? The next spot is the outside of the eyes, essentially in your temple area. And I'm sure you can go online and find a chart of all of these tapping spots. The next spot is underneath the eye, essentially on your cheekbone. Then under your nose. On your chin, an inch or so below your lower lip. The next spot is on your collarbones. Then we move over to the side, essentially, ladies, where your bra strap might be, right in that general area. Then we move to the wrists, both wrists. And then down to the ankle. The ankle spot is about 2 or 3 inches above your ankle bone on the inside of your legs. So that's the sequence. And by the way, there is no magic to the order that you tap in. It makes no difference. It makes no difference if you forget a spot. It's not that big a deal. Now, to get back to your question, Rusty, or your comment on the negative speaking, yes. In the beginning, the first couple of rounds, and a round would be completing a sequence of all of the spots, we start by talking about the negative emotion that you're experiencing. We want to let that negative energy out of your body, not to keep it inside or trap it inside, repressing it or suppressing it. We want to let it out while gently tapping on these meridian points. So the first round or two, now let's, for example, we'll pick on a smoker, let's say. So we might start tapping and focusing on, wow, I really want a cigarette. And we do a little narrative to ourselves, usually silently inside of our minds, but, you know, if you feel like it, you can say it out loud. But we might say, you know, I really want a cigarette. Oh, wow, I can't believe I'm drinking my coffee without a cigarette. And focus on the bad feeling that we are experiencing at the moment. We want to let it out. We want to honor the fact that we are experiencing a negative emotions. Our emotions are a beautiful part of us, good, bad, and indifferent, but we want to honor the fact that we are experiencing something negative right now. So we allow it out of our bodies, out of our systems. And depending on how bad it might be, you might have to do 2 or 3 rounds of tapping on the negative. Then we switch it around and begin tapping on what you would rather have instead. Going with the concept of a smoker, we might change it to, but I'm not going to give in to this urge. I'm not going to be a slave to a little white stick anymore. I'm not going to let cigarettes run my life anymore. I'm better than that. I'm stronger than that. I want to live. I want to be a good example to my children or grandchildren or whatever is important to you. Whenever we're making a change like this, it's important to know why are we doing it. And this is where we would focus on all of those ideas of why we are making a change. Does that sort of make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
and then I usually finish the whole thing off with a nice, deep, relaxing breath. You know, a diaphragmatic breath down into the tummy with a slow exhale.
So when you were a child, is this what you wanted to do when you grew up?
No.
What did you want to be when you were an adult?
I was really, I did not have much direction when I was young. It wasn't until I heard Bob Proctor when I was probably 24 years old, maybe 25 years old.
Uh-huh.
That's when I knew I wanted to help people help themselves. I wanted to be Bob Proctor. And it took me a long time before I actually realized that. It probably took me 25 years. I really didn't know exactly what I wanted to do with my life until I was about 50. And that's when I met a person. I started taking Reiki. And the Reiki practitioner, my teacher, was also a hypnotist. And it was the first time in my life I ever met an actual hypnotist. And she showed me the path to becoming a hypnotist, showed me where to go for my training and so forth, and I have never looked back. And this was the most wonderful thing that ever happened. I did have a day job at the time, and I had a rather lucrative career going in the insurance business.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struggling with the idea of leaving a lucrative career and starting all over again at ground zero. So I was having a real life struggle with this, and as often happens in life, the universe takes care of these things. And I got laid off. You know, the universe stepped in and said, okay, you're struggling with this. We'll make it really easy for you, Ed. Don't come back tomorrow. You're done. And that's what happened. And I knew what I wanted to do, and I have the most amazing and supportive wife in the world. And I came home that night and I said, honey, give me a day to figure out what we're going to do. And she said, well, take the weekend. And, you know, the very next week we went to a Chamber of Commerce meeting. You know, if you're going to start a business, you go to a Chamber of Commerce meeting. And at that meeting we met an acupuncturist who had just joined a practice in Somersworth, New Hampshire here, the very next town over. And it was they were putting together an integrative team to work out of an actual medical facility. It was a pain care center, and they had a naturopathic doctor, they had the acupuncturist, we had a Reiki person, and I went in for an interview to be the hypnotist. And things went very well, and I was invited to join the team. And a week after that, I was in business. And I started off, you know, one day a week while I did some other things to, you know, continue putting food on the table. And within 3 months, I was full time. And
that
I have not looked back.
Was that Adam?
Yes, Adam Lerner, yes.
He's been on the show, too. He's fabulous. I still have to get that.
Oh, he is. He is amazing. He and his wife, Betsy, they are both acupuncturists and amazing.
Yep, that's one experience I haven't had yet, I think.
Aha.
But I want to. No.
I will see an acupuncturist before I see my primary care doctor.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's what I heard. And I'm in the gym 5 days a week, and so I heard that would help my shoulder that I keep railing on.
There you go. Absolutely. Can't hurt.
And why don't you give us your contact information again? We're kind of halfway through the show, and it's a great place to do that.
Okay. My name is Ed Lane. My business is A New You Center for Hypnosis, 603-749-6463. My website is Someone's calling in already.
I know, right?
That's my call waiting kicking in. My website is www.anewyoucenter.com.
Wonderful. So talk to us a little bit about the training. How expensive is it? Do you have to get a doctorate's degree, or
Absolutely not. I am what is considered a lay hypnotist. I am not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist. I am considered a lay hypnotist. I do hypnosis or hypnotism. I do not do therapy. I'm a hypnotist, not a hypnotherapist. My training, and by the way, I am a certified trainer now with the National Guild of Hypnotists, but the training is a minimum 100 hours of classroom study and participation, most of which is hands-on, hypnotizing each other, bringing in volunteers to hypnotize, and so forth. But the key with the training, which I will say I love the National Guild of Hypnotists, but their training, by the time you're done, is probably equivalent to a high school education in the world of hypnotism. There is a lot more work to be done, but they give you a great basis for moving forward in a career. But basically, they want you to be confident and competent at getting a person into hypnosis and out of hypnosis, and also on how to work with smoking cessation, weight loss, and stress management. Beyond that, additional training is done. As I said, I have become an instructor myself. I also teach at the National Guild of Hypnotists convention. I am a presenter and have been for a number of years now. And I take classes. I have been specifically trained in fertility, specifically trained in sports, which is my real passion. I love working with athletes. The reason for that is athletes really want to change. They want to improve. I really haven't run into many smokers or overweight clients that really want to change. They'd like to change. They think it would be great to change, but do they really want to? Not really. So there's kind of a little internal conflict going on there. But athletes, fertility clients, people like that, they truly want to get the benefit. They want to make the changes. My training has been, as I said, sports, fertility. Well, I forget all the specific training. Sleep issues I've been specifically trained in. So there's a lot of specific training that is available out there from other wonderful hypnotists from all over the world. How I got where I am now, essentially.
What do you think the basic psychology difference is between an person with an addictive behavior versus a person who's like a negative addictive behavior? Because I think some athletes are addicted to being an athlete.
Oh, absolutely. I've run into marathon runners who are totally addicted. And what happens is in athletics, you get
a cortisol rush.
The runner's high, so to speak. The endorphins, the endorphin rush.
Yeah.
And absolutely, that can be addictive. Anything can be addictive. What we look for is it causing problems in our life? Is there a destructive nature to our obsessive behavior?
Right.
Generally, running, things like that, there's not really a negative side unless we're really doing harm to our body by overusing it and so forth. But again, I don't get into psychology. Psychology works on the conscious mind, the rational mind, the analytical mind. That is not where a hypnotist does his work. A hypnotist works with the unconscious mind. And the unconscious mind runs the show. in addition to all of its physical duties, like keeping your heart beating, you know, every couple of seconds, having you breathe every few seconds, digesting your food, and all of the other millions of duties that it has to do, it is also the goal-oriented part of us. It is the part of us that can be programmed. If you want to think of your mind, there are two parts to it. The conscious mind could be equated to the desktop of your computer. It's the RAM part. And the unconscious mind is like the hard drive, where all the true power is. You know, if we open too many programs on our desktop, the computer starts to slow down and eventually will crash. Well, that's what happens to us. We call it getting overtired. We call it being stressed. And we call it nervous breakdowns when we crash. We call it overwhelm. But that's what happens because the conscious mind is rather limited as to the amount of things that it can do at any one given time, which is why it has created this wonderful concept called habits. What happens is that the conscious mind, again, being limited as to its resources, whenever it identifies something as a repetitive motion, whether it's putting a sock on your left foot first every morning, or whatever tooth you start brushing your teeth on, or picking up a cigarette every time you pick up a cup of coffee or a telephone, these are habits. And when the conscious mind detects a repetitive motion like that, it says, "Thank goodness, I don't ever have to do this again." Send it downstairs to the unconscious mind for automatic execution in the future, aka habit. So that when we get dressed in the morning, we automatically put a sock on the same foot first every single day, and we've been doing it that way since we were like 3 years old. So the conscious mind doesn't have to make that decision every day. Which foot today? Or when we brush our teeth? We automatically start brushing on the exact same tooth every single day. And we do thousands of these automatic programs every single day. And this simply lightens the load on the conscious mind so it can go about keeping us alive by telling us, you know, it's time to eat or how to get to work and things like that. So that's what the conscious mind does. It solves problems. The unconscious mind does everything else. And it is the majority of us, if we wanted to think metaphorically, think about the iceberg, and we know that, you know, about one-third of it rises above the ocean, and two-thirds of it are hidden below. Well, that's sort of the metaphor for our mind. The conscious mind is that little part sticking above the surface, but that the other part, the two-thirds or greater, is lurking below the surface, and that's the unconscious mind. And, in fact, Albert Einstein has a great quote from years ago where he said that the intuitive mind or the unconscious mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind, the conscious mind, is a faithful servant. And we have now created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift.
Can you say that one more time? Because I think that's profound.
And it's on my website. the intuitive mind, also the unconscious mind or subconscious, is a sacred gift. And the rational mind or the conscious mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. The conscious mind does whatever the unconscious mind tells it to. But we've created a society where we've got things backwards. We prize ourselves on education. I'm not trying to downplay education, but we really honor the part of us that is the learned part. But we have forgotten the intuitive part, which I think is really where most of your listeners are coming from, the intuitive part, which is the major part of us. It is the most powerful part of us.
My show is based on mind, body, and soul, and if one part of that trine is out of place, I just don't think you're balanced.
Right, so,
we're out of sync. We're out of flow. We're out of spirituality. We're out of the grace that we're supposed to be. And
absolutely, balance is the goal. It's like the tires on your car. If you have a tire that's out of balance, you drive down the road going thump, 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 thump. A lot of us are going through life going thump, thump, thump.
So we have, let's see, Tony, your counterpart, your cohort, will be on in a couple of weeks.
He's my first student. He graduated from my very first certification class, and he has been a part of the organization for 2 years now. And he has centered more on the metaphysical side of hypnosis than I have. And not that I dismiss it at all. I love it. But it's the part of life that, you know, we all make choices, and I have chosen to go more on the clinical side, and he has chosen to go more on the metaphysical side with past life regressions, astral progressions. And also, by the way, he has created a wonderful program for ADD, ADHD sufferers. And to my knowledge, it's the first one, the only one that exists.
That's very cool. And
I understand he's going to be a guest on your show in the near future.
Yes, in a couple of weeks. I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that you were training and you know, that you do more than just hypnosis and EFT. Talk to us, we've got about 18 minutes, well, 16 minutes, because I got to close the show, but talk to us a little bit about the fertility. I didn't know you did anything with fertility. What is that? What do you mean hypnosis for fertility?
Well, once we have ruled out the medical issues possibly behind a problem with conception,
mm-hmm.
It all ends up being in the head, stress. As I mentioned, we are trained in stress management. In fact, almost everything I do, anything we do as a hypnotist, is going to be stress management. In my opinion, stress is the killer. It is the cause of all illness. When a body is not at ease, it is at dis-ease.
That's it.
And the immune system is compromised, and disease can enter our bodies and our minds. So stress is usually when we've ruled out physical issues, you know, trouble with the basic infrastructure of the reproductive system, it's usually stress. And sometimes it's fear. Sometimes on one level, and, you know, we talked in our session together about those internal conflicts, where on one part of us wants to begin a family, there might be another part that says, well, you know, we're really not financially set at this point that it really would be viable. I can't leave my job. We can't really afford daycare, so this might not be the right time to conceive a child. And, again, we're sending now a signal to the unconscious mind, and the unconscious mind says, well, gee, maybe it isn't the right time to have a baby, and conception does not happen.
Yeah, it's interesting how, as a species, we really have mastered unforgivable pressures as a society.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we have.
We've done a great job at mastering these pressures that really are, if you were to step back and think about life as a full spectrum, these pressures have no value or meaning. But we really hone in and hold that. So I am in 100% agreeance that stress causes cancer, all kinds of dis-ease. So it was nice for you to say that as well, because people hear me all the time talking about how stress is, I think, the number one killer.
I absolutely agree with you, Rusty. It is the number one problem that we all face. And the irony is, and you know, you might want to hit me if I say this, but stress does not exist.
Well, and
we create it ourselves.
Exactly. We put and really harbor and handle these external spheres to cause that stress, that tug of war, that duality, as you were talking about, that inner struggle.
Yeah, the internal conflicts that we have. I read a book about a year ago given to me by one of my dear clients, and I can't even remember the name of the book, but there was a Buddhist expression in it that said, to resist what is to suffer.
Yes.
And that statement has just resonated inside of me so thoroughly and completely, because right there in one sentence is the answer to everything. We are resisting the current circumstances of our life, and that's where all of our suffering, all of our stress comes from. And we create it ourselves. That's the darndest part of it all.
We do, and so it's interesting that when you're dealing with the fertility issues, after you've really clarified whether or not this is a physical manifestation versus a psychological manifestation, then you're able to play with the subconscious a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. We can resolve some of those internal conflicts if that is where it in fact is coming from.
Right.
We can help with just plain stress management. I mean, we've probably all known someone or heard the story of the person who couldn't conceive for years, finally adopts a child, and the moment the pressure is off, she gets pregnant.
Yes. I love you.
You know, it's because the pressure is off.
Yep.
The pressure of grandparents or hopeful grandparents. You know, okay, you've been married 6 months now. How come you're not pregnant? Where are my grandchildren? Where are my grandchildren? Come on now. And, you know, these pressures just build up on us. Now we have the expectation we've got to keep mom and dad happy by giving them grandchildren. And maybe we're not ready yet.
So in the last 13 minutes, or we'll say 8 minutes, if there was one thing that you would like an international audience of 90 plus thousand people, I don't even look at the reports anymore. I don't even know how many people listen to the show anymore. What is the one thing that you would really like them to take away from today's show?
Mom was right. It's all in your head.
My mom gives me T-shirts. I was always right.
It is all in our heads, and that doesn't mean that we make things up. But the answer to everything is the way we think about things. And hypnosis is a wonderful way of getting to the bottom of things, of helping us change. The bottom line is, hypnosis, if there's anything that you can already do, hypnosis can help you to do it better. If there's anything that you do that you don't want to do, hypnosis can help you stop doing it. The unconscious mind is the master. And when we access the unconscious mind, it's just changing a program. We run on programs. As I mentioned earlier, the unconscious mind is like the hard drive of your computer. A hard drive of a computer doesn't do anything until a program is installed on it. And if we install a program that says, I now make healthy choices, I eat healthy, nutritious foods at all times, junk foods have grown black and white and boring to me, and we install that program and get it deeply rooted in the unconscious mind, then that's the way we run. We just start making better choices. We start, eliminating the junk foods from our life because they've grown black and white and boring to us. And we can install those programs and remove programs. One of the biggest roadblocks that I run into all the time is the Clean Your Plate Club with weight loss clients. That, you know, you have to eat everything on your plate because somehow those poor starving children in China will feel better about life if I'm overweight.
Yes.
It just doesn't equal. These are some programs that we get that are stored in our unconscious mind from when we're young and we don't know any better, and they still run with us. I had a client absolutely burst into tears one day when I told her that she didn't have to clean her plate, and she was probably 50. What do you mean I don't have to clean your plate? I said, you don't. But somehow this was disrespecting her deceased mom.
The generation.
I mean, it was a major,
I think that was a huge, huge downfall for us socially, community-wise, because you know during the Depression, food was scarce, and you absolutely.
Exactly. And we didn't have refrigeration and storage like we do today.
Right. It's amazing.
And we can also use a smaller plate.
Right. Yeah, and plates got bigger. Portion sizes got bigger. We got really, really comfortable.
Oh, yes.
Over
Super
the last
size me.
Oh, yeah. I ordered
and America is supersized now.
Oh, yeah. I ordered a large iced tea, and I just thought it would be, you know, a regular 8-ounce glass, and it was like 32 ounces. I'm going, it's going to take me a week to drink.
Hey, 55-gallon drum.
I know. I'm going, okay, should I order a small next time?
Right.
It was amazing. So it's
yes,
all in your
and you know, as restaurants, they pride themselves on larger portions. That's what distinguishes them from the competition. And so, you know, all you can eat buffet. It's like a challenge. How much can I eat?
Well, and I have friends in the military, and not only is it a clean your plate concept, but it's also clean your plate in 15 minutes because that's all you have.
Yeah, the speed of light. Yeah.
Our school system,
right.
our schools are doing that with our children now.
Right.
So when my daughter started kindergarten, I was dumbfounded with how quickly she was eating her food. I'm going,
right.
Honey, sit down. You know, a dinner should be an hour and 20 minutes. It should
exactly.
be relaxed. It should be not this gorging competition. But
no, it's to take our time, enjoy every mouthful, give thanks for the wonderful foods that we're able to eat and honor those foods by enjoying them, by eating them slowly and enjoying the taste, the fragrance, the texture of every mouthful.
One
and it should take an hour to eat and not in front of the TV.
One of my Buddhist monk friends actually explained to me that you should really focus on your food and chew each bite at least 100 times. I have yet to master 100, but I get anywhere between 30 and 40.
Yeah, 15 to 20 is good. 15
yeah.
to 20 is good. It beats the 3 or 4 that most of us do.
Right.
And, you know, then we have digestive issues because we never properly, you know, digestion begins in the mouth. By chewing it thoroughly and getting all the saliva to mingle with the food and start breaking it down. So there's all kinds of good reasons for doing it the old way, the old-fashioned way, slowly, at the table, with family, with loved ones, talking about our day, talking about our feelings and our experiences in life. That's what a meal is about. It's not just woofing down as much food as you can in 15 minutes.
And not with our iPhones and tablets and
exactly
iPads.
No computers, no phones, perhaps some pleasant music in the background, but with loved ones, with family, so that we can communicate, talk about our days. This is what's missing in the family these days, in my opinion.
Big time. I absolutely
agree. Most of us
eat
our dinner on the way to the Little League field or to karate lessons or whatever, and suck it down in the car so we can get to the next event, the next activity.
Now, do you see, in regards to that, I am hosting a radio show specifically in regards to the parents who overdo it in that area.
Yes.
Do you see, because I personally, and you know, 37 years on this planet, it's not a lot of years, but it's enough to be wise enough to know that this is going to cause major, major, major problems with the next generation. I mean,
yes, and our children.
We're stressing out the kids, totally.
Yes, we are.
What are your thoughts about that?
I think we need to give children options. And there's a fine line. There's a fine line between apathy and pushing children. You know, mm-hmm. On the one hand, we have a concept out there where in sports we don't keep score, winning doesn't matter, taking some of the pressure off, and there is merit to that. But on the other side of it is, you know, sports is a metaphor for life, And winning is important. Winning is not everything, but it is important. And winning as adults is, you know, putting food on the table and providing for our family in a dynamic way, and so forth. So there's a fine line between the two, and, you know, we can fall on either side of it at any moment.
Well, and I think there's balance, and as a soccer coach for a bazillion years, I've had to throw parents off of the field because they're exuberant and inappropriate. This is kindergarten soccer, really?
Right. You know? I did a lot of coaching. I'm a grandfather now, but I did a lot of coaching in my day, and absolutely, parents were the worst part of sports.
Sometimes.
Absolutely the worst part. Kids were wonderful. The parents were the troublemakers. The phone calls you'd get at 9, 10 o'clock at night, you know, it just, you know, parents were the hardest part.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have about a couple of minutes, 2 minutes left to the show. Why don't you give us your contact information again? And I am just so very grateful that you were able to spend the afternoon with us and share what you do and why you do what you do. It's really a neat process, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love helping people to help themselves, to realize how phenomenal each and every one of them are. You know, most of us don't give ourselves credit for how phenomenal we truly are. But my name is Ed Lane, L-A-N-E. My phone number is 603-749-6463. My website, www.anewcenter.com. And on my website is a 24-minute audio on what hypnosis is, what it isn't, how the mind works, and why hypnosis can work so well. Rusty, I really appreciate this opportunity to share this information with you and with your listeners. I'm truly grateful.
I'm grateful that we were finally able to make this happen, because it's such an interesting and misunderstood technique. And I'm glad you and Tony in a couple of weeks will be able to clarify even more, especially because he's a little different with his methodology.
He's a little different in a lot of ways. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Tony's wonderful.
He said that. I won't tell him. Oh, by the way.
But yes, he looks at things in a different way through the metaphysical side of things, which is cool. It's the fun side of it. As I said, I'm on the clinical side. He's on the fun side.
Absolutely. Well, Ed, big hugs to you, and go have fun with your granddaughter. It's a beautiful afternoon, and thank you again. I'm really grateful for you taking the time.
Right back at you, Rusty. Thank you again.
All right. Have a great day.
You do the same.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. How great was that? Learned a little bit about EFT, which I've always wanted to know about. I've actually participated in hypnosis with Ed, and that was a really intriguing experience. And I highly recommend checking out his website and setting up an appointment. It's great. So next week we have Harry and Phil of Marvelous Mondays. They, as well, host a radio show here on Blog Talk that I'm going to be on in August, I think. They inspire, invigorate, and infuse their listeners with powerful energy of good news, good thoughts, good people. And so I'm really looking forward to hanging out with Harry. Harry and I are two peas in a pod, and it's just going to be a great show. So I look forward to that next Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And as always, I just want to let you know that I love you. I think you're beautiful. I see you, and I'm grateful to be here for you, with you, and by you, because you inspire me to inspire you. Until next week, humpity hump, love ya. And talk to you soon.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.